Hello, listeners. It's me again, Leila, host of the show Third Culture Therapy, with some of my thoughts about episode 4 with Jihad. I love how openly Jihad talks about the visceral experience of grief. Well, I say love, but actually, more than that, I admired and appreciated it because it was also very difficult to listen to. As was recording this particular episode of my reflections, I've actually kept it to the very last minute, more than the last minute. Episode 4 is out and live, and I still haven't recorded this, which I think is a reflection of my resistance to it, and which is probably all the more reason for me to do it. So, here goes. Grief is such an individual and multi-layered experience. And even though we might know of the so-called 5 to 7 stages of grief, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, guilt, and reconstruction, it doesn't necessarily mean that we go through them in a progressive order, nor does it mean that you can't go forwards and then go backwards. I was fairly young when I lost my dad to cancer, 24. Still a bit of a child adult who hadn't gone through many so-called real-world experiences like jobs, serious relationships, moving country, moving out of home even, which you come to realize you really would like to have your parents around for. I read an article recently by a writer and podcaster called Cariad Lloyd, who lost her father at a young age, 15, quite quickly to cancer. Many years later, in 2016, she created a podcast called Griefcast, in which she talks to celebrities about their shared experience of grief. One of the lines in her article discusses how you're sort of in the middle of still thinking your parents are a little bit annoying or whatever, and then they're gone, and you kind of have the rug pulled from under you. Her exact words, and I quote, were, "His death was so unexpected. I spent the next 10 years in shock. You don't get to cross the other side of the bridge with them. You're mid-conversation. You're still in that phase of you're an idiot and everything is stupid." When my dad was diagnosed with cancer, it felt like a ridiculous joke. My dad was always super healthy and always liked to boast about never needing to take even a Panadol or an aspirin for a headache, that he could run up and down the stairs as easily as when he was in his 20s, that he never got a cold. And I mean, all of those things were true, even though he was in his early 70s when he was diagnosed with colon cancer. Even though he was an older father relative to my friend's dad's, he was so dynamic and fit that he often looked and acted much younger. So when the diagnosis came in, I was just sure that he would recover like all the other people I had read about who had cancer, chemotherapy, and then recovered, right? I guess that was my first taste of denial. It didn't take that long for the rapid decline to come. After a few months of hopeful chemotherapy, if you can call a brutal chemical therapy that, and a very short recovery, the cancer returned and then spread. A few months after that, he stopped eating, his lungs filled with fluid, he was in a wheelchair. It all happened in a space of a few months, about a year, and honestly, I didn't really process it. After I was finally convinced that the end really was coming, I mostly acted like it wasn't. I understood mentally that he was dying. I just didn't really allow myself a lot of room to feel what that meant. I just steeled myself for what was coming. That was my second taste of denial, but also my form of jumping to the final grief stage of acceptance without going through the important other stages of my emotions. Catapulting myself across the stages of grief into acceptance happened quite a lot in the months after his death. People die, I thought. I was lucky to even have a father when so many others, I said to myself. Given his age and his involvement in dangerous politics, I was lucky to even have him for as long as I did, I thought. Humans are so strange in the ways they protect themselves from painful feelings. Years later, about 14 years now, and it's only been in the last couple of years that I've actually really started to feel a bit jealous of friends of mine who still have both of their parents alive. Cariad Lloyd wrote something else in her article that I read that resonated with me. I quote, "There's pain, confusion, and vulnerability. Then in your 20s, you act as if it was no big deal, and in your 30s, you realize everything has been about this. And boy, could I relate to what she wrote there, because the feelings caught up with me mostly in my 30s, which is when I really started to process the impact of losing him. And with thanks to therapy, really, shout out here to my therapist for helping me on that journey. There was something else I could relate to from what Jihad said about his mother's illness and the sensory impact of witnessing her so sick and vulnerable. When my dad was ill, it was my mother who was mostly caring for him. In all honesty, I hid from a lot of it. Again, denial, running away, head in the sand, whatever you want to call it. And yes, I did feel guilty about that afterwards. I didn't take on the primary caregiving role like Jihad did. But when the end was near, I was close by, and I saw him in a very vulnerable state of being. Tubes coming out of him, skinny and weak, nothing like that strong and fit and stable man I had known all my life. When he died, it was at our home in Damascus in Syria, and we were all there with him. And then when it was time to take him to the hospital morgue, I volunteered to be the one to ride with him to the hospital. I wanted to take some of the load off of my mother, who had already gone through every harrowing step of the illness with my dad. It is something I am both proud of and also slightly regret, or at least have mixed feelings about. There was a scene I saw in that hospital related to how my dad's body was handled that I really wish I hadn't seen, and it stayed with me for years. A bit of an odd contradiction about people in the Middle East is that, kind, considerate, and sensitive as they are, they can be really insensitive about certain things. And I guess the men in that hospital, whether they meant to or not, had not been very sensitive to what I was witnessing. I think part of it is that in the Middle East, we get quite close and personal with the deceased. There's a ritual washing the body after they die that mostly family members do. And bodies get wrapped in a cloth when they're buried instead of putting them in a coffin. So there's a lot of proximity to people who are dead. People are used to seeing these things and maybe have become a little bit immune to it. It's hard to say. Maybe being so up close and personal with death and with bodies all the time makes you so. And fair enough, if those who work in morgues are used to limp bodies twisted about and shoved in fridges or slack jaws wrapped in whatever cloth was about, I understand. But I wasn't, and I definitely wasn't when it came to my dearest dad. It was a vision of him that I wish I hadn't seen, and it is only now, years later, that the thought of it doesn't make my skin crawl. Somehow, with lots of tears and various therapies, I've diffused that thought, and I think of my father now as the man he was when he was alive and healthy and springing down the stairs, two at a time, with a big grin on his face. My mom took great care of my dad when he was sick, and she had to take care of a great many logistics when he died, not least the transporting of his body to Libya from Syria for the burial. Something I'll admit I was not a fan of because it felt like a country too far away from me. I've only been to Libya a handful of times, and I didn't really want him to be buried in a place I didn't have easy access to. But anyway, it seemed like the right thing to do at the time. My grandparents had been buried there, and there was our whole Libyan family tribe who were waiting there and who we somehow had to cater for. So I held in my own tears as everyone else wept around me. In fact, I remember my cousins wailing at his burial and me thinking, "Geez, pull yourself together, people." I think I was slightly annoyed at how they had usurped what should have been my outpouring of grief, even though I wasn't really able to do that. Maybe I was jealous that they could. Maybe I felt weird and ashamed that I couldn't. Processing grief takes time and a stable space to do it in. Unfortunately, various circumstances didn't really allow that. After the burial in Libya, my family returned to Syria, where my parents had been living at the time. But then my mother and I had to travel back to Libya a couple of months later to sort out some paperwork. When we returned to Syria, my dear aunt, my mother's sister, died of a different illness. One loss was packed on top of another, squishing each other with very little space to breathe or process. I also had a bad knee injury that needed surgery, so soon after that, I flew to London to go under the knife. It was after coming to from the anesthetic that I really wept for the first time. Physical vulnerability will do that. So well going under anesthetic, I'm told. But I closed the door on it fairly soon afterwards. Maybe the medication I was taking helped numb that too. Maybe the thought that I would crumble in such a vulnerable state while not being settled in one place was too scary to fathom. Maybe I was just delaying things. Then a few months later, my sister and I decided to visit my dad's birthplace in Haifa because the opportunity presented itself and we wanted to pay pilgrimage to a city my father adored and had hoped to be buried in, knowing, of course, that the Israeli occupation would not allow that. I remember feeling privileged to be able to go, happy that I was doing it on my father's behalf when his Palestinian refugee status meant he couldn't. But I don't recall feeling particularly strongly about anything there. It was like I was watching myself be there and do things and visit places. In hindsight, there was definitely a certain disassociation going on. Again, delaying the inevitable, really. I recently calculated that in the 9 months after my dad died, I traveled to another country about 8 times. That is, on average, once a month. There were various things to sort out afterwards, of course, financial, legal, etc. And I wanted to be useful and helpful to fix things. So I just kept going, moving, acting, doing, and thinking all the time that I was totally fine and that I had just accepted the fact of life, that people die, including my father, and that it was life, or death as the case may be. But how wrong I was. Finally, 8 months after he died, I moved back to London to start my first real job. My family all stayed behind in Syria, and I thought that a new life was beginning for me. Yet more denial. But it didn't take long for the cracks to appear. Alone and settled in London, and with a lot of silence around me, a searing pain began to rip through me. He was gone. My father, my beloved champion, my warm embrace, my rock, my pride, and the man who loved me the most was gone. Not on a trip, not for a little while, but forever. And that was a suffocating loss I wanted to desperately escape. So I can really relate to Jihad's attempted distractions through fun and friends and intoxicants that leave you reeling after temporary relief. And I also understand when he says that being busy pushed away some of that process for him until a sort of enforced lockdown, literally, during the pandemic made him have to deal with it. Eventually, there were many, many tears. This was when I was in London and finally alone. But they were haphazard and unprotected. They came during breakfast before I went to the office, or mostly in the toilets of my office, actually, where I would run to in between meetings and assignments and then come back to my desk with my eyes on the floor so no one would notice. But I do remember one of my friends sighing with relief when she saw me cry, saying, "Oh, finally, Layla, you're grieving." And I was like, "What? Shit. This is horrendous. I want to go back to denial and acceptance, please." And I seesawed between the two for a while. For a long while, really, to be honest. I don't think I fully embraced the grieving process until a couple of years ago, sitting in my therapist's chair, weeping in emotional pain, and just realizing how bloody much I missed my dad and how angry and upset I was that he was gone too soon. My dad's grandmother, my grandmother who I never knew, had also died of cancer. My dad was in prison at the time, a political prisoner in Libya. So he wasn't able to be with her in her last days, and he wasn't allowed to leave the prison for her funeral either. His mother dying was his lifelong unhealed wound, and he rarely spoke about her because of how much it pained him, I think, even though I know that they had a very strong bond. I mean, our family only found out that my grandmother had been treated for her cancer in a hospital right next door to the house we had grown up in London because one of my uncles mentioned it in passing when he was visiting us. Could that be why my dad chose to buy a house there? Is that why his daily walks around included a trip past that hospital? Even though he didn't speak much about her, his silence was nevertheless very loud. The pain revealed itself in the humming sound he would make when I tried to ask him more detailed questions about her. I'm sure there was guilt involved in that. I wish he could have spoken openly about it instead of carrying that burden alone. That must have been unbearably heavy and sad for him. I suppose what I'm trying to say in sharing my story is that you can't negotiate with grief, and you can't outwit it. Not long term, anyway. it will come for you, and it will be painful, and it will be hard, and it will be all the things you never want to experience. But that is actually life, and there are lessons in it, and healthy, meaningful ways that we can find to overcome our pain. And eventually, when you have gone through that whole horrid, horrendous journey, you will find, like I have luckily come to find in these past few years, that those people we lost were never really lost to us, and that there are plenty of ways to find them in our day-to-day lives. Recently, I joined in a group prayer during Ramadan on the specially holy night of Laylatul Qadr, which means the night of power, when it is believed that the holy book, the Quran, was first revealed. It is a night that it is considered particularly holy, and while I was there, worshipping, meditating, connecting to universal energy, I saw my dad's face appear, smiling and happy and full of warmth. It was really beautiful. I miss you, Dad, but I know that you are with me, always and forever. Thank you, and thank you for listening.